Hello, my name is Simon Ward, and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. And hello everybody, yes it's me, Simon Ward, and I am this week's special guest, resurrecting a format I tried a couple of weeks ago, which seemed to go down quite well, and answering some of our reader and listener questions. Now, before I start, I'd like to say that this show is dedicated to my two friends, my two Yorkshire friends who've moved themselves to the other side of the world. They're living in Perth, Western Australia. So Vic and Liz Burrows, this one with special Yorkshire accent is especially for you. I hope you enjoy the show, and please do share with your friends there in West Australia. So let's crack on. Always a popular subject is the one on nutrition, and I've been getting lots and lots of questions about this particular subject, ranging from what to do about my nutrition on race day to recommended nutrition books. So what I've tried to do is divide the subject up into some fairly logical stages. Now, race day is important, but the chances are that you've probably got two or three race days each year. And out of a total of 365 days, that leaves 362 days when you're probably training or recovering. So I think that what is more important than race day nutrition is everyday nutrition. Food that helps you maintain a healthy immune system, withstand illness, recover from training, and refuel ready for the next session. As I consider that to be the priority, I'm going to start by answering questions on everyday nutrition, and then we're going to move on from there through a natural sequence until we get to race day nutrition. So the first question came from Laura Deal. Laura wanted to know, she said, my biggest issue is eating a healthy, balanced diet. How easy is it to maintain a simple diet? Now, it's easier than you think, Laura. However, I do agree that it probably does seem quite difficult, because we're overwhelmed with information right now. Every time you pick up a triathlon magazine, or indeed a magazine relating to any particular endurance sport, you open up a Facebook page, you go onto a forum, you go onto somebody's website, there's always a nutrition or a diet plan being promoted. Currently, the trend is to go to lower carb, high fat. Some people are promoting completely zero carbs, keto diets, as being the best thing since sliced bread. Others still maintaining that you need to take carbohydrates in. There seems to be a battle between carbohydrate fans and those who think carbohydrates are the enemy. The truth is somewhere in the middle. You will find people who do very well on a ketogenic diet, and you'll also find people who do very well and a carbohydrate-laden diet. They're probably at two ends of the spectrum, and somewhere in the middle, you will find the pathway that probably suits you and the majority of triathletes, somewhere that takes a moderate ground. I'm going to try and give you some guidelines that you can follow on a regular basis, Laura, so that you and everybody else has some simple rules that they can adhere to. Now, the rules that I follow have been set by a company called Precision Nutrition. They educate coaches. They have a lot of people following their programs, and it's very, very successful. It's what they call nutrition agnostic. So they favour, or they don't favour, red meat eating over pescatarian, over vegan, over vegetarian. They try to give guidelines that suit people who fit into all of those categories and all of the other little niche groups that are around. So here we go with some simple guidelines that you can follow. And if you can follow this, the majority of the time, you'll be doing pretty well. So rule number one, and don't please think that these take any order of priority, that's just the way they've laid them down, eat every 2 to 4 hours. If you eat larger portions, particularly if you're training hard, then you might find that your digestion is difficult to complete before your next training session, so you start feeling a little uncomfortable. You might also find that you get spikes in insulin, which leave you buzzing for a bit and then feeling a little flat as that dies off. You sort of have a bit of a crash, particularly if you're eating or consuming lots of sugary substances. If you eat every 2 to 4 hours, you get smaller quantities at more frequent intervals. It helps maintain blood sugar. It also helps you to digest your food quicker. So if you're training 2 to 3 times a day, it may just feel a little easier. The next rule, eat complete lean protein every time you eat. Now, I think that if you adhere to the guideline that you consume around 1.5 grams of protein per kilo of body weight, maybe a little less for females, 1 to 1.25 grams per kilo of body weight, you'll be somewhere near the right level. That means that if you weigh 75 kilos, you want to be consuming around 100 grams, maybe 150 at max if you're in a period of heavy training, but certainly no more than that, because it will just go straight through your body, it won't be used, and you'll be overloading liver and kidneys. The difficulty for most people is that they don't have enough protein for breakfast, and so they end up having to load that protein in later on in the day, maybe a little bit for lunch, and then a huge amount of protein with their evening meal, which then makes digestion difficult at a time when you're going to sleep. So think about ways in which you can get protein in for breakfast, maybe having eggs instead of cereal, maybe having peanut butter, possibly having an omelette, maybe having some Greek yogurt on your porridge, and having full fat milk. Another target which is widely known but not often met is the 5 a day. Now, I would say that for athletes and for people wanting to lead a healthy life, 5 a day is your minimum, not your target. And I also find that majority of people make up this target or this minimum by eating too many fruits. And there's nothing wrong with fresh fruit, except that if you eat too much of it, you're consuming an awful lot of sugar. Even if it is in a natural source, it's still sugar once it's broken down. If you're consuming fruit juice, then it's broken down straight away and you get a huge dosage of sugar into your blood, which can cause a spike in insulin levels and then a drop. So probably best to try and eat more vegetables than fruit, maybe 2 to 1 or 3 to 1. Particularly this time of year, eating salads is easy, but in the winter I would be making soups and other stuff like that, and roasted vegetables. The next thing, and now this is a biggie, it's partly linked to low carb, high fat. Particularly if you're fond of carbohydrates, think about how you can eat carbohydrates when you really need them. That is after heavy training sessions or before you have a super heavy workout coming up. So if you've got a long bike or a long run, or maybe if you're leading up to a big race, you may want to make sure that your body's topped up with carbohydrates. And certainly when you've done one of those really heavy workouts, then consuming some carbohydrates. But once those carbohydrate sources are topped up in the muscle, I would ask whether there's any need to continue eating those carbohydrates if they're just going to be stored and laid around the body as fat ready to be used later. Do you really need to keep consuming those carbohydrates? Now, this is a hotly contested debate, and I'm sure we're going to get some questions or comments about this. I'm not saying carbohydrates are the enemy. I just think that maybe endurance athletes are programmed to eat far too many of them, and you might want to be asking some questions about whether that's necessary. On the other side of eating carbohydrates is the consumption of healthy fats. Now, a lot of people demonize fats, but in fact, healthy fats are really good for you. Monounsaturated, polyunsaturated, and saturated fats. It's not true that eating fat makes you fat. All of these fats in a healthy balance, equal parts of each, can dramatically improve health and help you to lose fat. Saturated fats come from animal products, butter or coconut oil for cooking. Monounsaturated fats from mixed nuts, olive oil and olives, and your polyunsaturated fats from flaxseed oil, fish oil and mixed nuts, and from oily fish, not fish oil supplements, but oily fish and even avocados. Now, if you really want to make an impact on your nutrition, if you've got a little bit of weight to lose, then there are some things that don't really contribute to recovery. Chocolates and cakes, for instance, on too regular a basis, or calorie containing drinks. So we're talking about alcohol. We're talking about your daily cappuccino. We're talking about fruit juice and soft drinks, sodas. So one way to easily remove some calories from your diet is to remove those and consume only drinks that have got zero calories. So black coffee, flavored teas, mint tea, peppermint tea, they're the same thing, of course, green tea, and some of the different flavours that you can get. Really good. And also water, of course. One might also want to concentrate on whole foods. Now, this is just a general guideline. If you're buying foods at the vegetable aisle in the supermarket, if you're buying fresh meat, if you eat that fresh fish, if you're then taking that food home, storing it in the fridge, cooking your own meal from scratch, you won't be going far wrong. If you're buying food that's already been prepared in a packet and it goes in the oven and goes for 20 minutes, there's a good chance it's been made in a factory. So it's one or two steps from the original source. It's probably had stuff added. That's probably likely to be salt and some preservatives and flavourings and other chemicals that you can do without. Not to mention some sugar, particularly if they're foods that are low in fat. So try to avoid those. Make your own meals from whole, largely unprocessed foods. The next thing, several people have asked, how do I eat and be good with my eating? Well, I don't think that there's anything bad with nutrition, unless you're going to eat something that's going to kill you. So poisonous mushrooms or hallucinogenic mushrooms probably shouldn't be part of your regular diet, certainly if you're an athlete. But there's nothing wrong with a bit of chocolate or a bit of cake or a glass of wine or a couple of beers every now and again. The problem is when it's every day and consumed in too large a quantity. That's when you have problems with managing weight. So I say eat well 90% of the time. Let yourself go 10% of the time. You'll be on a good path towards success if you follow this. If you think about 10% of your weekly meals, it's 2.1 if you have 3 meals per day. If you have 5 meals per day, as per rule 1, then that's 3.5 meals per week you can have when you break the rules slightly. I do think that endurance athletes have got into the habit on the whole of thinking they can eat what they like because they do lots of training. But that's just not true. If you consume lots of biscuits and chocolate, sure, you may well have a single-digit body fat, but that doesn't mean you aren't causing insulin spikes. And over time, if your body becomes insensitive to that, it can put you into a pre-diabetic state. So please be mindful of that consumption. Now, here's one of the rules that I think is going to help everybody to follow a good nutrition plan. It's about developing food planning and preparation strategies. For example, on a Sunday afternoon, write a timetable up of every meal that you intend to eat for the next week, including the snacks that are going to come either side of your training, of which we'll come back to more in a minute. Then go through your cupboards and your fridge and your freezer and outline cross off which foods you've already got, and whatever's left is your shopping list. Then go to the store and buy only what's on the shopping list. Don't buy any of the bog off deals, unless you're doing bog offs on grapefruits or avocados or tomatoes, but usually it's not, is it? It's bog offs on Oreos and Kit Kats and that sort of stuff. Once you've got the stuff home, then start preparing it. Make some meals, put them in the freezer, unfreeze them or defrost them. Starting with the morning you go to work, so they're ready for you when you come home and you don't have to spend half an hour preparing your meal. Chop up your vegetables and your salad items into small bowls full of pre-prepared stuff so you can just take a scoop when you need it. And you're done. The other preparation strategy is spending 15 minutes every night, probably preparing the foodstuffs with dinner and then making the next day's lunch and breakfast so it's already there in the fridge for you to take to work or give to the children or to get your breakfast going with a minimum of preparation the next morning. Now, developing those disciplined strategies might seem like they're time consuming, but actually you'll save an awful lot of time because it'll enable you to avoid going to the supermarket every day after work and that sort of thing. Trust me on this. Try it for a few weeks and see how much time you save. And finally, have balanced daily food choices with healthy variety. And most people generally have several meals that are their staples. I do. You probably do. For me, my breakfast staples are either an omelette or porridge. If I have porridge for breakfast, I often have an omelette for lunch. In the summer, I tend to have salads more. I have a lot of salads for my dinner with my protein. I tend not to get bored by this. I know some people have the same meal or the same two meals every week, the same breakfast, the same lunch. They just like that routine and that's fine. But if you don't, then you may want to be looking for alternatives. And Colin Chappell did ask for any recommended nutrition books. Nancy Clark's Sports Nutrition Guidebook is one that I've been using for a long time. She also wrote The Athlete's Kitchen. But two which I've started using more recently by Bijou Thomas and Alan Lim. The first of those is called The Feed Zone Cookbook, Now, Bijou Thomas is a chef. Alan Lim works with some of the cycle teams. I think he's with BMC. So they're very used to creating meals to feed athletes. You'll get a lot of ideas there. The Feed Zone cookbook has got over 300 pages. And then training and racing specific food, particularly designed for on-the-go food for athletes, is called Feed Zone Portables. It's got a picture of all of these little parcels of food, either savoury or sweet. You can see them labelled up, wrapped in tin foil. And these are the sorts of parcels that go into the musettes that are given to the cyclists when they're in the Tour de France and other big races. And they're savoury ones, are rice cakes, often with vegetables in and some olive oil. The sweet ones are similar, flapjacks made out of oats with olive oil and some fruit in. So you can try those and you might find that you like that natural, real food instead of some sports nutrition stuff that's been commercially produced. So there's an example of some books you can get. But if you have others, please feel free to post them on the Facebook page and share them with everybody else, because I'm sure we're all looking for new ideas for our nutrition. Okay, Jonathan Turnbull, he was asking about how important the right nutrition is. And Warren McKay said, how do I choose my right nutrition? John Falvey wanted to know how to be good with your food. Natalie Stevens said, can I eat mainly cooked dinners most of the time? Well, Natalie, if you follow those guidelines that I've given you, as I said several times, you'll be on the right track. And it will make sure that you're refueling, helping your body to recover, and maintaining a good immune system. Now, the key to all this is to remember you're eating meals, you're eating food, not macronutrients. But that doesn't mean you need to ignore macronutrients. Each of your meals needs to have the right portions and quantities of protein of, and I'm stuttering here a little bit because I'm looking for some guidance here. So I've got this little document called Portion Size Guide. So if you are wondering what a proper portion size is and you don't like the idea of measuring, then Precision Nutrition prepared this little document, which I'll share with you in the show notes. So put your right hand out in front of you and clench your fist. That's the approximate size serving of vegetables or fruits that you should have for lunch or dinner. If you open that palm up or hand up and look at your palm, that's the serving size for lean protein. So lean red meat, poultry, fish and seafood. If you're a vegetarian, then cottage cheese, eggs, tofu. Clench that fist again. Half a fist size would give you the approximate quantity of whole grains, beans and legumes. So if you were going to have some wild rice or if you're going to have some quinoa, that's roughly the size that you need, half a fist. I said already that healthy fats are good. So you would want one thumb of fats. So if that's the olive oil that you're putting onto your salad, if that's the butter you're going to use to put in to cook your fish, if you're having some coconut oil or coconut milk, that's about as much as you need. That should give you an idea of the portion sizes. So hopefully that will keep you on track with your daily nutrition. Now remember what I said, you can have a drink of wine, if you like, a glass of wine. You can have a cake, but rather than having it as an everyday normal thing, save it for a treat once or twice a week when you go out with friends, when you come back and you really wanted to reward yourself for a good day's worth of training. Then it's special and it tastes better. Moving on from daily nutrition, we then get some questions about daily training. So Tracy Lazenby Peterson wanted to know what the best nutrition is while training. Carmelo and Feng Bai wanted to know how they improve their nutrition while training and competing. And Steph McGovern wanted to know how to get nutrition right before and after training sessions. So let's take a weekend. You have a long ride planned for Sunday. You want to make sure that you're not going to run out of energy. So the first thing is to do is to eat well the day before. So sure, have a meal that's higher in carbohydrates to make sure that those glycogen stores are all topped off. It might be argued that if you've done that the night before your ride, there's no need to have a huge carbohydrate meal for your breakfast. In fact, it might be a good opportunity to try out your pre-race meal. Something like a bagel with some jam or honey would be perfect and just enough to top off the glycogen in the liver, no more. You go out on your long ride. If it's 3 or 4 hours, then you may well need some carbohydrate. If you're going to be doing efforts that drop you into that carbohydrate burning zone. However, if it's a fat-fueled ride, 60 to 70% at a reasonably high intensity, one might argue whether you need any supplemental carbohydrates at all. I do know people that can ride for 4 hours consuming just water and some electrolytes. But if you are going to take carbohydrates, then maybe just have some mixed into a bottle a week solution just to keep topping up your blood sugar in case you end up doing some hard work riding up a hill or into the wind. Now, I would say that if you've got training sessions that are less than an hour, you don't need to fuel those with carbohydrates. You have approximately 2 hours worth of carbs within your system, and you could take 2 hours if you were working at threshold. If you're working below threshold, then it would take you longer to burn through them. So any session less than 90 minutes certainly doesn't need anything more than water and a little bit of electrolyte to get you through it. If you're doing a really hard session that does burn through your glycogen, then definitely have a meal afterwards that's going to replace that and top off those glycogen stores. And equally, after that long ride or run, then you probably will have used some glycogen. So again, have a carbohydrate meal. Probably have one already prepared so that when you come home and you're feeling a bit hungry, if there's nothing ready to eat, you're probably going to snack on some things that are less than beneficial for your recovery. So having your meal already there waiting is an ideal way of getting the right things in at the right time. On a daily basis, you need to plan your food around your training. So if you randomly finish a training session and just look in the cupboards, you're never going to get the right nutrients. It's really important for you to be planning your nutrition ahead of time. It's something you can do when you're doing that weekly timetable. And I think that's one of the random bits of nutrition that most people don't follow. They know what they should be eating, but often they don't eat it because either they don't leave themselves enough time to prepare the food, or they do have enough time to prepare it, but the right food's not in. So then it means a trip to the store. And when you do that trip to the store, it's taking time up. So you just don't bother. You just eat what's in the house. Okay, before we get on to race day, a couple of questions about maintaining weight. I would argue, and I know a lot of other people scratch their heads and wonder, why you see so many chunky triathletes. I mean, most people are doing 8 to 10 hours worth of exercise a week, way more than the medical profession recommends to keep yourself in good shape. And yet they're carrying weight around the middle. Now, I know that some people are a big build and they may naturally be of a body type that carries a little more body fat and be chunky. But that doesn't account for the people who aren't like that. So the question is, are they using exercise to control poor eating or to counteract poor eating habits? Or are they actually really mindful of what they're eating? Because if they were, I'd suggest that most of those triathletes weren't going to be carrying that extra body fat and certainly shouldn't have an issue with losing 4 to 5 kilos before a race. Now, it might be that the reason that triathletes are overweight is because they're just not eating properly and they're consuming large quantities of processed foods, too much sugary stuff, and not really understanding how many calories they're consuming on a day and thinking that if they do have a few more, then they can just go out and run or ride a bit longer to burn it off. But that's not how it should be. So if you've got some weight to lose, first thing is make a food diary, work out what you can get rid of out of that daily consumption, highlight it in yellow pen. Most likely you're going to select those foodstuffs or those things that you're drinking that aren't contributing to recovery. So if it's Coca-Cola, if it's a cappuccino, if it's a couple of glasses of wine or a beer at the end of every night on your drinking, if it is cake, a bar of chocolate, a couple of biscuits with every cup of coffee during your break at work time. You can eliminate all of those. They won't help you to recover from training. They won't help you to pre-fuel. They won't really be noticed other than that they're a habit. And dropping those, probably take 300 or 400 calories per day max off your nutrition over a week. That's almost 3,000 calories. That's almost a pound you could lose per week if you just trained as you normally do. Now, Ricky Bushell's question is very similar to the one that was Dan Blackburn, who wants to know how to get rid of some timber within the confines of a mental life. Ricky Bushell wants to know the best way to maintain weight when not training. Ricky, if you have a resting metabolic rate. So the metabolic rate is how many calories you burn when you're not active. So if you were just sitting at your desk working, driving your car to work or getting a bus, let's say you burn 2,000 calories a day. If you then add your daily training calorie burn, that might be 1,000 calories a day. So in order to maintain your body weight, you need to consume 3,000 calories. If you're consuming more than 3,000 calories, you'll gain weight. If you consume less than 3,000 calories, you will lose weight. It's called a thermodynamic equation. It's basically calories in versus calories out. Now, there are also the right kind of calories, obviously, but on this one here, calories in versus calories out. So if you stop training for any period of time because you're injured, because you are too busy with work, maybe you're on an end-of-season recovery or a post-race recovery, you need to cut down the calories accordingly so that that calories in versus calories out sum is still in equilibrium. If you stop training and you consume the same amount of calories at a certain point, you'll be gaining weight and it won't be very long before you're putting those pounds back on, and then you've got to work much harder to lose them. So that's how you do it, Ricky. Just be very disciplined. Okay, let's move on to racing. So firstly, Jamie McKeegan wanted to know, what's the best thing to eat in the hours leading up to triathlon? Now, I already mentioned trying this out on the morning before you've got a big ride or a big run. Have a bagel and a half. That's going to provide you with enough calories to top up your system, assuming you've been eating well in the days previous to that. Find something that you can digest easily, that's palatable. You want something that's high GI, really, rather than low GI. Some people like porridge. That is a bit more low GI. You're really just trying to top up the liver. So something that's palatable, that you like, and that's also going to help you calm your nerves by filling your stomach up with a little bit of food. But don't be over full. If you have a flipping banquet the morning before the race, then you're going to get to your event feeling a little bloated, and that's not going to make you very comfortable for the first part of the swim. Also, I'd be saying that you want to be consuming this food around 3 hours before your race. That should be long enough. And we get lots of questions asking what we should do during an Ironman to fuel. But before that, Abby Durrani asked the question, how should one use nutrition at different length events? And that's a very good question. Go back to the point I made earlier about having approximately 2 hours worth of carbohydrates or glycogen in your body. And it would take you that long if you were working at around threshold or just below. So think about those marathon runners that we used to see after a couple of hours of running, hitting the wall. They're operating just at or below threshold. So it takes about 2 hours to burn through those supplies before you start getting that bit of a crash and you start feeling wobbly. If you're working at slightly lower intensity than that, then your stores will last a bit longer. So any race that lasts for less than 2 hours, you really don't need to consume any carbohydrates as long as you go into it with full glycogen stores. Maybe you could take a bottle of carbohydrate solution, weak solution on the bike and just be sipping that to make sure you can get through the run. But please remember that it takes about 30 minutes for any fuel source to get into your blood system. So anything that you take at the start of a 5K run, if you're running it in around 30 minutes, isn't really going to be of any help. Now, there is some research that shows that just swigging a carbohydrate solution and spitting it out can help the receptors and release some carbohydrates into the system. So that might work in a short distance race, is just swigging some stuff and then spitting out at the start of the run. On a standard distance triathlon, it's likely that most people listening will be going for longer than 2 hours. So I would suggest either the option of taking a carbohydrate drink on the bike or having a gel that you're going to take just before you get off the bike and jump into T2 and then go through the run. You should be okay, even at the intensity you're doing standard distance. For half Ironman, you are going to need to have a more robust solution on the bike. It's up to you whether you choose solids, liquids, gels, something in the middle. For my own personal preference, I like to have solids further away from the run, so at the beginning of the bike ride. And then as I get close to the run, I start to consume liquids in the form of gels. On longer races, you're going to have a much more thought out nutrition solution. It may well require you to be self-sufficient, or there may be special needs options. That's something you'll need to work out in line with the regulations for the race. It might be also that in a long race, you get sick of eating sweet foods. I know I do. And so there's lots of people, including people like Chrissy Wellington and Paula Newby-Fraser, suggest having a little treat in the form of a small packet of salt and vinegar crisps or some pretzels or some cheese sticks or something that you can chew on that's just going to give you an alternative flavour from the sweet stuff you've been consuming. There's nothing wrong with eating real food. I know some people like Marmite sandwiches or pork pies, but again, real food like that needs to be digested, and it probably needs to be broken down in the stomach, and it's going to take a little longer than something that's in a liquid solution. So please bear this in mind when you choose what you're going to have on the race and how close you consume that to the run, because if it's not digested, the chances are it's going to slosh around in your stomach and make you feel quite uncomfortable. Now, the scientists recommend 60 to 90 grams of carbs per hour. Personally, I always feel very queasy when I eat that amount, and so I've been trying to consume less. There is some research out, which I'll also put into the show notes, by a friend of mine, Dr. Dan Plews, who you might have heard on some of the other podcasts. Dan's done some studies about carbohydrate consumption in Ironman triathletes. For those of you who are racing at around the sub 10-hour mark, there will be some of you listening, you probably need to have a strategy that does include meaningful supplemental carbohydrates, and you need to work out when and where that's going to come. For those of you who are not quite that fast, one might argue that your race intensity is at a fat burning level, with just occasional dips into carbohydrate stores when you're climbing uphill or when you're coming out of corners or just putting out the power occasionally. So you may be able to get away with a lot less carbohydrate, but it will be one of personal research. Okay, everyone's different. Some people are much better fat burners than others, either by training or naturally. So that will have a bearing. And it's very difficult, I think, for researchers to recreate the exact circumstances under which you race. And so I always take their data with a pinch of salt. In order to simulate an Ironman distance swim, followed by a 6 or 7 hour ride, followed by a 2 hour run, which is about the time when things really start to go wrong for most people in terms of their stomach problems, you really have to do it in a race. So one could say that the only way to research is to do several Ironman distance races before you go for your big one. Just food for thought there. Also, I'd say that it's much easier to consume those calories on the bike, so your nutrition strategy would be one that's based on consuming more on the bike, but no more than that 90 grams, because whilst you might be able to eat and swallow more, it's still got to be digested in your stomach and then absorbed into your bloodstream. And that limit is 90 grams per hour. So if you're consuming more than 350 to 400 calories an hour, it is going to slosh around in your stomach for a while. It will also depend how well you digest that on the weather conditions on the day. So the hotter it is, the more cautious you might be about carbohydrate intake. And that is a question that was asked by Sue Jum. Sue wanted to know how to stop race day belly. So prior to the race, you're going to get a runny tummy. I don't get a runny tummy before I go out on a long training day. You probably don't either. So what's the difference on race day? Of course, it's the nerves and the stress. How do we stop ourselves going to the toilet 3 or 4 times before the race starts? Well, one way you can stop this is by cutting out fiber from your nutrition within the 48 hours before the event. That will take care of 90% of your problems. You're never going to get rid of those race day nerves, and in fact, they are a good thing. So do expect to have a runny tummy, but if you're going to the toilet 4 or 5 times, you probably need to readdress your whole nutrition strategy in the approach to the event. Once you get going on the race, if it's a very hot day, some pre-race acclimatization to the heat can help with leaky gut syndrome, which they also think is one of the causes of GI distress, and being mindful of your carbohydrate consumption and the strength of that and the amount of water you take in and how that osmosis process takes place across the stomach lining, and about how hard you're going. If you go too fast too early, that could also create problems, particularly if your core temperature's rising. But again, I repeat, it is down to personal preference and personal experimentation to find what works for you. All right, I think that we've just about covered everything there. Now, there are a couple of random questions. So Mark Thomas said, can I eat cake? I refer back to what I said earlier, Mark. There's nothing wrong with eating cake. But if you think that because you're an endurance athlete doing lots of training that you can eat what you like, it will bite you in the bum eventually. If you want to maintain a good year-round body weight that doesn't require too much discipline, let's face it, if you're training 10 to 12 hours a week, you shouldn't require too much discipline as long as you don't get into the wrong shape to start with. So maintaining what you've got can be done by being mindful about when you have those cake moments. Not every day, not every time you're out on a ride. Occasional treats is good. So yes, of course. And Andrew Stallion said, what's my favourite cake? Well, I don't know. Andrew, if it doesn't have bananas in, then I'll eat it. I change my favourite cakes depending on my mood and the season. But I do have a sweet tooth, so I have to be like that person I mentioned a minute ago, showing discipline and not having cake all the time. Peter McEwen wanted to know how he can stop cramps after training. So, Peter, sometimes cramps are down to muscular fatigue and muscular exertion, so it could be nothing at all to do with your nutrition or hydration and could just be to do with effort or the tension you put through those muscles. Some people, I know, without realising, screw their toes up while they're running. They very definitely screw the toes up and tense the calf muscles while they're swimming, particularly if they're kicking hard, and this can contribute towards cramps. That said, some people do sweat a lot of salt, and in the current warm, humid weather that we've been having, you can see it on people's cycle gear, particularly all their running gear. If it's black, the sweat and the salt deposits on there. You may want to think about adding a little bit of extra salt to your meals or in your drinks. Now, rather than investing in those expensive effervescent tablets, I just like to take water, add some quality sea salt and a splash of lemon as a nice sports drink. You could put it in the fridge and drink it when you like, and it will cost a fraction of what it does to buy the commercial stuff. Finally, Andrew McNabb. Andrew wanted to know about what to put in kit bag for transition. He said he's got all his bases covered on nutrition apart from this. Race day nutrition is down to personal preference. What goes in your kit bag for eating before the race? I wouldn't have anything after I've had my breakfast. I'd just be supping a bottle of water, which has got a weak carbohydrate solution in, just to keep me topped up. I would have my energy bars in a bento box. I would have a little flask of gels. As another reason for doing this as well is that by decanting your gels into a little bottle beforehand, it means that you're not going to be in danger of leaving litter on the race course. And these days, the organisers are getting very, very hot about littering and disqualifying people, even if it's accidental. So it's one way of avoiding having to carry around rubbish and accidentally littering the course. So I'd have a gel bottle there. I don't have any meal breaks when I come back into T2. I'm just in and out. But what I would do is have my run nutrition wrapped up in my running hat. I pick the running hat up. I jog out of transition. And as I'm going, I decant the contents that are in my hat into my pocket on my vest. And then I put the hat on and I'm off. And that would usually be a bottle, again, of decanted gels. And that's it. And then I would take some stuff off some of the feed stations as I'm going along. And that's me. I'm done with answering these questions. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope I've answered everything you've asked. But if there's anything that I haven't covered, please feel free to write into the Facebook page below in the comments boxes. If you've got any questions, if you've got any comments, if you want to share any of the strategies that work for you, if you disagree vehemently with anything I've said, that's great. Let's start a discussion so everybody can learn. Once again, thank you very much for joining me on this podcast. I do appreciate that you've got lots to choose from, and so choosing to come to this one is really nice, and I appreciate that choice of yours. Once again, to my friends Vic and Liz Burrows in Australia, see you lasses. Been nice seeing you back in Yorkshire, but I hope you're enjoying back and being in Perth, and please do promote this amongst your friends there. And to the rest of you, enjoy the rest of your week, and I will be back very soon with another guest. And by the way, don't forget the show notes. I'll put all of those documents on there for you. All right, take care now. Bye-bye. That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today. And I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon and 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.